This morning we're going to take a look at that last night of Jesus' life from his arrest in the garden all the way in up to the cross. Now there is inherent difficulties of trying to put the Gospels in chronological order. They were not written that way. They weren't intended or being written that way. And each of the Gospel writers takes his own liberties with where events fall, and they're to make a point and to a purpose and to accentuate a point that the writer is trying to make. And even things, like Peter's denials are compressed into one very short period of time. So as we go through this and we try to put things in this order, it is done with some trepidation. As a result of this, it is going to be difficult for you to keep up flipping from book to book, chapter to chapter. We'll be covering so much and going back and forth to cobble together this series of events. I understand that some of this is conjecture. And if you have a question about something that I've presented, if you have an issue with something that I've said, then feel free to approach me, and I'll show you the passages that I used, and will do my best to give an answer for what I believe. So time is short. Let us begin. The sound of footfalls and the glow of torches announce the arrival of the mob who have come to arrest Jesus and to take him before the high priest. Jesus rouses James and Peter and John, who have again fallen asleep. The day's events have been exhausting, and for them and for Jesus as well. Matthew 26:34-46. Jesus is singled out by his betrayer, Judas, who, having procured a band of soldiers and some officers from the chief priests and the Pharisees, went there with lanterns and torches and weapons. And the band of soldiers and their captain and their officers of the Jews arrested Jesus and bound him. John 18:3-12. Meanwhile, back in Jerusalem, Caiaphas knows that the arrest and the trial must happen swiftly, under the cover of night and while the city sleeps. For the Jewish leaders are greatly afraid of the crowd who believe Jesus to be a prophet. Luke 22:1-2. Judas has greatly aided Caiaphas in his plans, and the first phase has been successful. There is much still to be done, and the time is so short. Witnesses must be gathered and prepared, and the Sanhedrin quietly assembled in the palace of the high priest. As Caiaphas makes these preparations, Jesus is on his way from the garden across the Kidron Valley. Night is cold and especially dark, the moon by this time beginning to set behind Mount Olivet. Jesus is bound and alone with his enemies. His friends have failed him. And the walk provides Jesus ample time to reflect on the events of the day, and perhaps more unsettling, the events to come. The most likely path takes Jesus along the eastern side of Jerusalem outside the city walls, heading south towards what is called the Water Gate. Having entered through this gate, it'd be a short walk westward across the city to get to the palace of the high priest. All of this designed to go without any detection. Peter and John have gathered up their courage and follow the procession at a distance. Jesus is taken first to Annas, John tells us in chapter 18:19-24. Annas is the former high priest who still wields a great deal of power and is the father-in-law of Caiaphas, who is the current high priest. Perhaps this was done in deference to Annas. Or maybe Annas played a more important role than we imagine in the plans to silence Jesus. Whatever Annas was expecting, he was soon disappointed, for the interview seems to have been very brief. Only John records this in his gospel. In the end, Annas is frustrated by Jesus' answers and sends him on to Caiaphas. Peter and John arrive at the palace, John's connections allowing both entrance to the courtyard, where Jesus, for the first time, denies Jesus for the first time, and Mark records this first of crow of the rooster in John chapter 18 and Mark chapter 14. Jesus is still bound, and is guided to the wing of the palace where Caiaphas, along with the members of the Sanhedrin, have been gathered. Upon entering the hall, Jesus is able to look around and examine the great gathering, able to look into the faces of each man who look back at him with contempt and condemnation. Jesus has walked into a courtroom where everyone present is a prosecutor. Once Jesus is delivered, the Roman guards are dismissed, and Jesus is now alone with his enemies, and there is no one left to ensure that any law, Mosaic or Roman, will not be violated this night. This, the second of three stages of the Jewish trial, is the one with which we are the most familiar. Jesus' accusers are prepared. The charges would have been agreed upon, and the witnesses and their testimony settled. But all this has been done very hurriedly. And as a result, the witnesses are not as well prepared as they should have been, and things begin to unravel quickly for Caiaphas, who with the chief priests and the whole council were seeking testimony against Jesus to put him to death, but they found none. For many bore false witnesses against him, but the testimony did not agree. Mark chapter 14, verses 55 through 59. Somewhere in the courtyard, Peter denies Jesus a second time. Jesus takes all this without a response. Witness after witness are paraded before him. Questions are asked and answered, and all of it is directed at Jesus and his guilt. You know, it takes us only moments to read the passages that talk about this stage of the trial. But what happened that night certainly took much longer. Luke gives us an idea in chapter 2 and verse 59 that it was at the minimum an hour for the proceedings to take their place. With the continuing silence of Jesus, Caiaphas is becoming more and more uneasy with the way things are progressing. This must happen tonight. It must happen before dawn, before Jerusalem awakes and finds out what has been going on in the palace of the high priest. So in the midst of the testimony, Caiaphas stands up and interrupts all the proceedings. And he interjects, "Have you no answer to make? What is it that these men testify against you?" But he remained silent and made no answer. Mark chapter 14, 60 through 61. If the witnesses can't agree and Jesus remains silent, there will be no charge worthy of death. Jesus must be compelled to speak, to say something to incriminate himself. Caiaphas, have you no answer to make? What is it that these men testify against you? In verse 60, again, silence. Are you the Christ, the Son of the living God? I imagine a pause here, a beat or two of silence as Caiaphas awaits an answer. Then Jesus says, I am. And you will see the Son of Man seated at the right hand of power and coming with the clouds of heaven. You know, I can almost see Caiaphas and those in the room just stunned into a silence. Could it be this easy? Did he really just say what we think he said? Then Caiaphas, in feigned horror, tears his garment and says, what further witnesses do we need? You have heard his blasphemy. What is your decision? And they all condemn him as deserving death. Mark chapter 14, 63 and 64. Now Jesus, who had watched Caiaphas tear his garments, who had listened to the charge, the false charges being brought against him, he had heard the final sentence, the sentence of death. And as this is going on, he is suddenly surrounded by a group of angry men. A blindfold is pulled over his eyes, and he can feel men spitting on his face. And then the blows come, but he knows not from where. There's no way to anticipate or deflect them. His hands are still bound. All the while, voices cry out, prophesy to us, Christ. Who is it that struck you? Mark chapter 14, verse 65. Perhaps it is as their rage abates and Jesus' blindfold is removed that Peter denies Jesus for the third time. And at the sound of the rooster's second crow, Jesus turns and looks out from the hall into the courtyard and at Peter. Peter then remembers what Jesus had said to him. Before the rooster crows twice, you will deny me three times. And he went out and wept bitterly. Luke chapter 22:61, Mark 14:72. How very much alone Jesus must feel at this moment. The Sanhedrin is dismissed to reconvene at daybreak, Matthew 27, verse 1. And during their absence, Jesus is left with the night guard in Caiaphas' home and is subjected to whatever abuse the guards wish to indulge. They return early in the morning and formalize the verdict already reached and draw up the charges to present to Pilate. For without Pilate's consent, Jesus cannot be put to death. Matthew 27, verses 1 and 2, and Luke 22:66 through 70. The proceeding is brief. It must be. This must be concluded before Pilate's courtyard becomes crowded with those who will gather to find out which prisoner Pilate will release in the Passover this year. Mark 15 and 6. The whole company of them, the Sanhedrin and Caiaphas, gather together and they bring Jesus before Pilate, Luke chapter 23 and verse 1. According to John's account, Jesus was taken into the palace, but the Jews remained outside in the courtyard so as not to be defiled before the Passover. The Jewish leaders are looking for Pilate to quickly confirm their charge and to carry out the sentence of death. However, Pilate instead decides to try Jesus himself. But the leaders are prepared for such an eventuality and begin to propose charges that would prick the ear of a Roman. And following Luke's account, we see some of these charges. Jesus was misleading the nation, forbidding the paying of taxes to Caesar, claiming himself to be a king. But Pilate is unimpressed and states outright that he finds no guilt in this man, Luke chapter 23 and verses 1 through 4. Then something that is said that would give Pilate an out, giving some little glimmer of hope. He stirs up the people, teaching throughout all Judea, from Galilee even to this place, verse 5. Galilee is Herod's responsibility, and to Herod, Jesus is sent. And so Jesus, growing more weary by the hour, is forced to walk to the palace of Herod, who is in town for the Passover. This is the last thing that Caiaphas wants. The anonymity that the early morning provided is quickly slipping away from him and the Jewish leaders. The chief priests and the scribes follow, desperate to have this interruption be a brief one, Luke 23 and 10. Herod wants miracles. Then he wants a multitude of questions answered. Receiving neither, he and his soldiers treat Jesus with contempt and they mock him, while the chief priests and scribes cry out vehemently, accusing him. Herod tires of this, and Jesus gathers himself and with the chief priests and scribes makes the journey back to Pilate. As time passes, the crowd outside the palace grows. Since these events of the previous night were done in secret, the crowd does not gather for the trial of Jesus, but for the release of a prisoner by Pilate. This is confirmed by Mark in chapter 15, verses 5 through 8, where he writes, "Now at the feast, he used to release from them one prisoner for whom they asked. And among the rebels in prison who had committed murder in the insurrection, there was a man called Barabbas. And the crowd came up and began to ask Pilate to do as he usually did for them. Now the Jews, fearing that the crowd would ask for Jesus, interject that the chief priests stir up the crowd and have him release Barabbas for them instead," in verse 11. When you read John's account of these events, it becomes clear that Jesus was inside Pilate's headquarters and that through the balcony from which Pilate communicated with the Jews, the cries that rejected Jesus and called out for Barabbas filtered their way in to where Jesus sat, and he listened to them. And I just wonder if Jesus thought back 1 week as he had traveled from Bethany to Jerusalem and the same crowds cried out, "Hosanna, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord, even the King of Israel," John 12:12-14. But Pilate was not ready to capitulate just yet. Neither did he have the courage to release Jesus outright. So Pilate took Jesus and flogged him with a whip with leather straps and studded with pieces of bone and pieces of glass. Historians write that this alone had caused the death of many men. And the soldiers twisted together a crown of thorns and put it on his head and arrayed him in a purple robe. They came up to him saying, "Hail, King of the Jews," and struck him with their hands. All of this is done while Jesus' wounds from the attack of the Sanhedrin early in the morning were still visible. Pilate goes out again and says to the Jews, "See, I am bringing him out to you that you may know that I find no guilt in him." So Jesus came out wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe. Pilate said to them, "Behold the man." John chapter 19, verses 1 through 5. Pilate hopes that this will satiate their bloodlust, but it does not. And finally, he relents and releases Jesus to be crucified. The purple robe is removed, the crown of thorns torn from his head, and Jesus is flayed back, is clothed again with that which belonged to him. And now the beam of the cross is laid across his shoulders and tied to his arms, Matthew 27 and verse 31. It has been at least 2.5 hours since Jesus first appeared before Pilate, Mark 15:1 and John 19:14, and perhaps 9 hours since he left Gethsemane under guard. In this time, he has neither eaten nor drank, not since the meal in the upper room the night before. He has not slept in more than 24 hours. His body bears the repeated beatings that he has undergone. He has witnessed his friends fleeing from him, and one of those closest to him denied that he even knew him. The crowds have turned against him. He has been falsely accused and falsely condemned. Is it any wonder that he cannot bear the beam of the cross throughout the city and on to Golgotha? A man named Simon is enlisted to carry the beam for Jesus, and the progression continues. Jesus reaches Golgotha about 9 a.m. The historian Eldersheim describes the crucifixion in this way. First, the upright wood is planted into the ground. It was not high, and probably the feet of the crucified were not above 1 or 2 feet from the ground. Thus, could the communication described take place between Jesus and others, and the short stalk of hyssop moisten his lips. Next, the horizontal beam is placed on the ground, and Jesus is laid on it. As his arms are extended, drawn up and bound to it, a strong, sharp nail is driven first into his right hand and then to his left. Now secured to the beam, Jesus is lifted up by means of rope, perhaps with the use of ladders, and the beam is attached by ropes or nails to the upright post. Lastly, Jesus' feet are extended, and either one nail hammered into each or a large piece of iron through both. And so might the crucified hang for hours, even days, the unutterable anguish of suffering till consciousness finally takes him. Jesus will remain on the cross for 6 hours before he finally dies. Surely he has borne our griefs and carried our sorrows. Yet we esteemed him stricken, smitten by God and afflicted. But he was wounded for our transgressions. He was bruised for our iniquities. The chastisement for our peace was upon him. And by his stripes we are healed. All we have gone astray. We have turned everyone to his own way. And the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. I know this was hard to hear. It was hard to preach. But sometimes I think it is good for us to be sobered and to be confronted with what our sins have caused, and to read with a sense of awe the story of Jesus.